So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review.
Do you have your email open?
Yeah.
I accidentally emailed all my raw notes to you instead of me. Oh, could you just... Sure. Oh, you know what? I'm an idiot. I just opened my sent mail and I have it right there. Never mind. I'm very fried right now.
Great. Now I can look through your notes.
Was the night before Christmas.
Oh boy.
Not a creature was stirring. Not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there.
JR, he sure ain't no Burl Ives.
Well, thank goodness.
Thank goodness Santa's
the
here.
The children were nestled all.
That's real Santa
morning.
All visions of sugar plums danced in their heads.
A little uneasy about her hanging them balls on him.
And Mama...
Don't worry about his balls. I'm worried about Santa Claus. I never thought I'd be happy to see Santa Claus coming out and throwing candy
Santa
to the kids, but any interruption
don't you
for
have
this?
A stocking that stuff somewhere else.
I knew I shouldn't eat those brownies that the fans brought
You're
in.
Lose such a clatter. I sprang from my bed. Will you get the hell out of here?
He sounds like Nathan Lane.
I'm trying to do something nice for all my fans around the world, and you're sitting there with your fat old jolly stinky self. Come on. To the window, I flew like a flash.
I'm just wondering how I got in this
tore
business.
Tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of a new fallen snow.
Go!
Oh, hello, Santa! Ho, ho, ho! Goldust!
He hit him with the bag of goodies!
The real Santa is kicking Goldust's ass!
It's Vader!
It's Vader Claus!
I thought that it was a jolly Batman in a red suit, and it was! It was Vader!
Silver and gold, silver and gold. Everyone wishes for silver and gold. How do you measure its worth? Just by the pleasure it gives.
Hello and welcome to Review Away. It is John Pollock alongside Wei Ting. And we are just days away from Christmas. Actually, we're a full week away from Christmas. What's happening, Wei?
Oh, not much, man. I'm just celebrating early by drinking... A Red Devil.
A Red Devil?
Yeah.
Oh, I bought you that, didn't
yeah,
I?
Yeah, you bought this for me from Russia. Red Devil. It's a, I guess it's like a Red Bull with alcohol already mixed in, which is...
Yes. Technically, a lot of clubs refuse to do for liability purposes, but in Russia, they don't give a fuck.
Well, it just comes prepackaged. In fact, like clubs wouldn't do it. Like Red Bull on the can, it says don't mix it with alcohol. But I mean, here, it, I guess in Russia... No, they can't get sued as easily.
Yeah, they're like, hey, you should not listen to the devil. It's a bad influence on you.
It's red, though. I thought Red Bull was like yellow. Is it just a different color?
Well, that's the devil's brew, so it is red. Are you drinking it in a cup, or are you out of the can?
Right out of the can, man.
Oh, okay.
It's quite tasty.
I drank a few of those in Russia. I didn't care for them too much. Not enough that I wouldn't buy them for you, but I still felt that I mainly bought it because of the Red Devil fight team that Fedor Emelianenko used to be a member
right,
of.
Right, okay. Cool.
So it had the fighting connotation.
Well, I'm going to be both drunk and very energetic during this podcast.
What a awesome, awesome. So if your heart explodes, that would be very unfortunate, especially for this particular edition of Raw.
Yeah, it would be bad.
We're going to do things a little backwards today, Wei, because usually we save what's coming up next week for the end of the show, but we kind of already discussed it on Review a Raw on Monday night. Next week, the first ever Review Away Christmas show, which we are scrambling to kind of get together and stuff because we were going to announce this last week, but then you almost had your Tokyo trip. And then we didn't know what was going to happen. We thought Wei was just going to leave us for the holidays. It was going to be a very, very sad Christmas for yours truly. But instead, Wei is here for the holidays. And thus, what else are we going to do on Christmas morning? We're going to do a podcast.
Yeah, I'm actually quite looking forward to this. I mean, I know you have a lot of guests lined up. Among them, are you going to surprise us?
We'll maybe we'll sprinkle in some once we have more confirmed names. Okay. Already, we have two guests. And I believe, Wei, you just got something in the mail today from a 619 area code with some eggnog that you said you're going to open up Christmas morning to have on the Christmas show.
That's right. Yes.
From our good pal Conan.
Yeah, that's right. I didn't know you. You could put that stuff in eggnog, but evidently you could.
Well, what stuff? You haven't opened it up yet.
Oh yeah.
Or have you?
I have an idea.
Save it for Christmas morning.
Okay. Okay.
And then we can get your reaction to the eggnog.
Yes.
On the Christmas show next week.
Okay. All right.
If you go on over right now to the message board, lawradio.proboards.com, I have posted a whole thread about our Christmas show and the details. And in it, we've asked you three things of what you can provide for us. We're hoping that we can get some wrestling-themed Christmas songs to sprinkle throughout this podcast and break up some of the chats, and we will discuss your songs. We're only giving you about a week or so to do this, so I don't know if this will be a colossal success or failure. We'll find out. But also, send in some topics for us to talk about on Christmas morning. We're not going to be reviewing a show. It's just going to be me and Wei talking as humans on Christmas morning.
Does it have to be wrestling related?
Of course not. It can be anything.
Okay, great.
And thirdly, we're asking for your predictions for 2014. Because I don't want this to be really a retrospective show, because we kind of are going to do that on the law. But maybe this will be a forward-looking show. And come up with a Christmas present for your favorite or least favorite pro wrestler. We're asking you to be a little creative here. So lots of options of how you can participate.
Do the predictions for 2014 have to be wrestling-related?
Of course not.
Great.
Of course not.
Cool.
Let's not be morbid, though. Let's try and keep it jolly on Christmas. Right. Remember, this is going to be Christmas morning. People are going to be listening to this, you know, as they're opening up Christmas presents.
Yeah.
As I assume the entire law universe will be doing on Christmas morning is you download the MP3 and then Christmas begins.
And then you see your family.
Yes. And just for the hell of it, I posted this video someone created of John Cena versus Randy Orton dressed as elves on WWE 2K14 that I got great joy out of. So, making it very Christmas themed. Are you becoming more of a Christmas person, Wei, as you know, you are getting closer and closer to Christmas?
No.
Do you ever listen to Christmas music? No. No tree this
I'm
year?
I'm becoming less of a Christmas person as
I get
older. Oh,
my God. So, I'm dragging you into this.
Kind of, yeah. Yep.
But you wouldn't be celebrating anything otherwise. So, maybe I'm just keeping you busy on a Wednesday morning.
Yeah, you're interrupting me from my sleep, basically.
Well, come on, Wei. It's you got to be. Look at that. We already, as I look now, have a Christmas video posted called "Run Away MC."
Can you actually play it? Because I tried to play it, and it's not available in my country.
Okay. Well, I didn't try that. Well, no, you gotta. We'll listen to it on Christmas morning.
Well, he made it unavailable in our country. Like he banned Canada from it.
Okay. Well, Danny Hernandez. Ungeoblock this one because we'd love to play it and hear it.
Yeah.
He's our first submission here with a song.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about this
one. Me too.
This has been, you know, I wanted to do a podcast the night after the U.S. election and one on Christmas morning. And after that, I don't think there's anything left to do.
I think it's a great idea. I mean, I think we should do more holiday themed.
Maybe we should. Shows. Maybe we should do, you know, we'll do a Valentine's Day show.
Oh, that's. There's an idea.
That would be great. Maybe that can be the show that we had talked about for years where people call in with relationship advice. Maybe we could get a call-in show
a relationship,
for Valentine's Day.
Yeah, a relationship show, a romance, love and relationship show for wrestling fans was something I've always wanted to do.
All right. We're saying this only half-jokingly. I would actually think that would be
awesome. I'm actually serious.
Get some calls. So maybe. If we give people enough notice here, 2 months in advance,
yeah.
I think that's a great idea. All right, well, we're going to get into the review. Some people get very, very unruly when we spend too much time not talking about the subject at hand, which almost makes me want to talk about other world issues. But let's move on. Raw is War from Monday, December the 22nd of 1997. The beautiful metropolis of Lowell, Massachusetts was the home of Raw. And first off, Wei, what a, you know, granted, it's been 16 years, but this Raw compared to today's Raw, I mean, we always talk about how kind of, you know, from 98 onwards, you've always had the stage and the Titantron, and a lot of the looks is kind of the same. This particular episode, no ramp. It was like taped. It was a completely different feel to Raw than what we are accustomed to, even over the past decade.
Yeah, and why was that? Because they did introduce the stage prior to this.
Yeah, I would have to imagine that it just came down to the building configuration, and they were probably, like, this place looked like it held like 5,000 people. It did not look like a big, big building, and maybe the ramp was just, it wasn't possible to put it up. I really don't know the answer.
Yeah, it looked just like, you know, like an ECW show or one of the old Monday Night Raw shows.
This felt like the down period in WWF history, which actually at this point, I mean, Jesus, they were literally weeks away from doing the Tyson angle with Austin. And I mean, this was
a couple of months after Survivor Series.
Yeah. Like, this was when the company was just getting set to really explode the following year. But you watch this show, this was actually the Monday before WCW's big, big Starrcade show with Hogan against Sting. So, I mean, at this point in time, I mean, WCW was still handedly winning the war at this point in time. Mm-hmm. The show kicked off with a video on the Legion of Doom and their history in the WWF, showing them winning titles over the years, including from the Godwins earlier that year, and then being destroyed by the New Age Outlaws last week and shaving off Hawk's mohawk. They powerbombed Animal off the apron through the table, and showcasing this subtle alliance between DX, the original DX of Michaels, Triple H, and China, and the Outlaws, which actually wouldn't become an actual pairing until after Shawn left after WrestleMania. But working together here, taking out the Legion of Doom, and we would not see the Legion of Doom again, I believe, until... Actually, I think they would come back briefly in January, and then it would all lead to them returning as LOD 2000 at WrestleMania that following year.
It's so dated today.
LOD 2000. Yeah. Would they be LOD 3000 now if they were to do this today?
Yeah.
Would that be the appropriate leap in century mark?
I think it's a bit too soon for 3000. That's like well beyond any of our lifetimes to even comprehend. I mean, who knows?
But it feels like they were only jumping like 2 years into the future. I mean, it wasn't like some crazy futuristic dynamic to a team adding 2000. I mean, are we going to wait till 2998 to introduce a Techno Team 3000?
Yeah, that would be like us saying, we're now review away 2015.
I mean, we know where WrestleMania is going to be that year. Yeah. I mean, that's not too much of a leap, is it?
No, but 2000, I guess, just seems like a nice round number. But I would say if you're looking for a futuristic name now, you should go maybe like 2200, LOD 2200.
LOD 8S, like the iPhone chronology.
8S, okay, sure. Throw some letters.
Is that what they're at now, the 7S?
I think it's the 5. S.
5S? Yeah. Oh, so 8S is pretty much a gigantic leap.
Futuristic.
At this point in time, you know, 1997, it was, you know, as creatively they were really starting to surge in 97, they certainly were not financially at this point. That was one of the big issues involving Bret Hart's big contract with the WWF at the time. It was this 20-year deal. He was getting paid more than anybody at the time, and there was a point in late 97 where the WWF was very worried that they were going to have to declare bankruptcy. There was actually, in late 97, the USA Network, they were going to be changing their complete lineup in 1998. They were going to get rid of Tuesday Night Fights, which was their boxing show on Tuesday nights that featured live fights. And they were discussing getting rid of Raw as well. And it wasn't until the rebound in 98 that USA changed their mind and kept Raw. And that story doesn't get discussed too much because it never occurred. But I mean, in the fall of 97, things were not necessarily rosy in the WWF. However, They spared no expense in this opening way, in this abandoned building that was about to explode, maybe a metaphor for some people's fears of the WWF at the time. But my goodness, this was quite the opening that they put together whenever they introduced this. I think early 97, they changed to this opening.
To this day, it's still my favorite opening for Raw. I mean, it's you know, the classic Thorn in Your Eye song. And yeah, like I mean, just those shots, they look so good, of the ring on fire. And
they had to edit Brett out of this.
Yeah, well, that is
which was probably not easy.
That's the unfortunate part of doing these things, and you know, probably the reason why they've kind of strayed away from shooting things like this and just resorting to clips and highlights, is because, you know, guys leave your, especially back in that time, guys leave your company, guys get injured, they retire, they get swapped around. So unfortunately, this didn't last too long. But for the time that it was there, I thought it looked so cool. It was just such a drastic change from what you had before. You know, first of all, like the rock music, and then just the excellent imagery.
I also, you know, as a fan watching this, the first time I saw it, it was like, well, Steve Austin is the top guy, because it was like he is the key character here in this opening, walking into this burning building, and it's all the focus. Like, if you're just watching this, you feel, well, this is the show starring Steve Austin.
Yeah, yeah.
The announcers, which were broken up from hour one to hour two, the first featured Jim Ross, an extremely young Michael Cole, and Kevin Kelly.
This was, did they always do this, a three-man team with these three? Because these are all traditionally play-by-play guys.
Yeah, well, this was also coming off the Survivor Series when Vince took himself out of the role. And I don't know if this was temporary, because we had no Jerry Lawler on this at all, which I cannot remember some of the broadcast teams at this point in time before they just shifted to pretty much just Ross and Lawler. I would assume in early 98, they moved to that permanent pairing for both hours. I can't remember how long Cornette lasted or Cole and Kelly. But I have to assume that this was just an odd week where Lawler was either not there or just not part of it, because it was a little strange.
Well, none of them were actually there.
No, this was all done in post with a green screen.
Yeah.
Something you could not get away with today, but was
it looks so
bad. This is what the WWF did all the time. And I will say, as a young kid, when I saw Vince McMahon and like Jesse Ventura with the big crowd behind them, I always thought it was live.
I think sometimes it is. Like, sometimes they're just right by the stage with that shot in the background. This
97 one, I don't care how versed you are. This was just
the lighting was off. Like, you can always tell if it's live or not by whether or not the fact that the announcers have to raise their voice. Because, I mean, obviously, if you're in a live crowd, you can't really hear yourself unless you talk a bit louder. Whereas when you're filming in a studio, you could just use your regular voice, and they were certainly using their regular voice.
Yeah, they did enough to confuse people, because the Saturday night's main event, they'd always have with Vince and Jesse, like, right in the arena. But then for Superstars, I think they went the green screen route. This also featured the time period of the Raw uniforms with their black and red jackets, and they were all decked out in their team uniforms. Oh, my God, my fire alarm's going off.
Shit. Uh-oh.
Just a sec. I can turn it off.
No, you shouldn't do that. You should probably get out of your building. We should... I think we have an emergency. This is the first fire alarm during the review.
My condo is about to turn into the opening of Raw.
Yeah. Wait, you could just turn off a fire alarm?
Yeah, it's never legit.
Doesn't that kind of defeat the purpose?
Well, it's a building alarm. It's not my actual area or my actual condo unit that has the alarm. So you just press a button and turn it off. It's always bullshit.
So there's never a fire?
There's never a fire. Ever, ever, ever.
So what if there actually is a fire?
I'll be completely fucked, because I'll press the button and just ignore it.
That could be right now.
Yeah, maybe. But someone will come on the loudspeaker and tell me, yeah, well, you're fucked.
Okay.
And
all right.
Then it'll become a question of, have we done enough of this podcast that it's worth sending to Way?
Well, I'm recording, so.
Oh, okay. So there.
No matter what, we'll be fine.
I can still scramble.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the show starts off with DX coming out, and it's Shawn Michaels and Triple H in bathrobes, accompanied by China. Michaels, the WWF champion at this time, had won it from some dude a few weeks prior. Michael says that they have a present for those that have been nice this year. And then Hunter says that the New Age Outlaws were picking the bones of their own kill last week in reference to the Legion of Doom beatdown, and tells them, stay out of our business. This never went anywhere, teasing this kind of dissension amongst these two groups.
No, it didn't. Did they have any interaction before the two of them joined?
No, not really. Actually, they teamed up at the February pay-per-view. It was like Triple H, the Outlaws, Savio Vega, like, replaced Shawn Michaels. So they always had kind of this subtle alliance. So it made sense when they all came together after WrestleMania. Yeah. But I, you know, this throwaway line here was like teasing some problems between them, which never went anywhere.
Do you think it's time again for any factions to form up? We're seeing a lot more tag teams lately in the WWE. Do you think it's time for any of them to join back together and maybe make super groups?
I've always found if it's the right group and they're booked like a really important group, it can do wonders. I mean, Evolution was, I think, a great example of that, where you had some established people in Hunter and Flair, and you had two people that you really wanted to push. And I think when you can hide someone there, and that's how you can really develop someone, and you start to associate them with main eventers. And I think Evolution was a great example. I think right now, even, I mean, kind of going against that theory, the Shield, there was no proven people. They were just three guys that were booked strong, put together, and then hopefully when you can break them off, that they have some legs coming out of it. And I think the Shield, especially for Roman Reigns, I think being in the Shield for a year has really, really helped them, versus a guy like that just brought up or pushed like a Ryback and then doesn't necessarily have traction. All right, here's the announcement. Oh, Jesus. These
no
idiots.
Announcement?
Well, I thought it was.
Oh, let me ask you a question. Who will make the announcement?
Can you hear this?
This is Onyx Fire. We are testing the fire alarm system.
Are you kidding me?
Disregard all sounds and all signals, as this is only a test.
Did you hear that?
Don't they know that some people could be recording podcasts?
This is so unprofessional on their part.
We are testing the fire alarm system.
Fuck.
Please disregard all sounds and all signals, as this is only a test.
These guys do tests like every two fucking weeks. And you know what the result is? When there is a real fire alarm, no one's going to take it seriously.
Yeah, okay, maybe. I don't know. But I would be happy that they were doing these things. What if all of a sudden it didn't work? But my question to you is, before I was rudely interrupted, who will make the announcement if the guy who's supposed to make the announcement is on fire, dying?
Well, then it would be happening like at the ground level, because yeah, that's where the person is. So, I mean,
the base.
Yeah. I can't really answer that question.
You'd be really screwed.
Yeah. Maybe there's a designated door knocker on each level to inform people, and they all have like a text messaging system where they get a text when there's a legit fire on the ground level. Alert everybody.
Uh huh.
That would be my best guess. I don't know.
Well, best of luck.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's going to be best of luck for our listeners to get through this podcast, yeah, as these bloody test alarms go off, and I'm going to have to run over and hit this button every 20 minutes. But we will soldier on with the lack of professionalism from my home. Yes, we were talking about supergroups. I think if you have the right people, sure.
Right.
It can be. I thought in 97, though, at this point, it was like the WWF just went in the, you know, they saw the success the NWO had, and they just tried to create all these groups. And it was like, fuck, we had DOA, the Boricuas, the Truth Commission. And it was like none of them really had any substance. It was, you know, DX and the Nation kind of had their chosen stars that they wanted to push as a result of it. But it was like, man, they just flooded things with all these groups.
The Truth Commission.
They were on this show.
Yeah, I know.
Sniper, Recon.
Yeah.
Classic names.
Classic names that I don't think anybody will remember.
Imagine pitching that to the, you're going to be Sniper. And you are Recon. Awesome. Thanks. Can't wait to run with that. From there, after making the taking the dig at the New Age Outlaws, we go back to Michaels, who says that, Hunter calls Owen Hart a nugget, and this resulted in big chance for Owen Hart, who had a lot of steam behind him coming out of the Survivor Series as the last remaining Hart family member after they pretty much wrote off Jim Neidhart with an angle after the Survivor Series. British Bulldog left the company as well for WCW, and Owen was at least in line at this point, you would think, to really get that massive push, but unfortunately it was also at the same time of the ascension of Steve Austin, and Owen certainly took second fiddle to Austin at this point in time when it came to the company.
What was the contract issue with Owen?
Owen was still under contract for like another 3 years or something like that. So it wasn't, and Vince didn't want to let him out of his contract. Bulldog was also under contract and paid a massive amount, like in the six figures, to get out of his contract to go with Brett, which turned out to be a horrible decision on his part. They did nothing with him. He got staph infection in WCW when he, after he got dropped on that trap door, and then ended up going back to the WWF 2 years later. So it was just kind of a nightmare for him in WCW. And with Owen, Vince didn't want to let him out of his deal. He wanted to keep Owen and wasn't going to let him go to WCW. And there was even a point where I think Brett got on the phone with Vince, and it was, anyway, Brett very much wanted Owen to come with him to WCW, but he couldn't. And I don't know if Owen necessarily did want to go to WCW or not. I think he realized he was kind of caught in the middle here, that he actually got a raise coming out of the Survivor Series. They actually upped his deal just to stay. So, I mean, you want to maybe go with your brother, but at the same point, it made a lot of financial sense to stay in the WWF at the time. They didn't have to raise his deal, and they
did. You see the reaction that he got in this segment and on this show, and clearly he was sort of the guy poised to take over Brett's position, you know, as the guy who was screwed by Vince McMahon. But do you think that the fact that he didn't get over as well as, you know, people expected him to, do you think that's directly related to Steve Austin?
I think that, you know, obviously in hindsight, you can't really argue against going with Austin over Owen. But I thought that there was still a lot more you could have done with Owen as maybe your number two. I mean, he was, he had a ton of interest after the Survivor Series, and they really didn't do much for him. It's like, first of all, Michaels got hurt, so you couldn't even do some kind of mini program before that point with Michaels and Owen. I think 100% you could have got a pay-per-view out of those two, and there would have been a lot of interest for it, even if it was that February show before Mania, and Owen was like the setup for Austin. But Michaels was hurt, and Owen ended up working with Hunter. He got nothing out of that program, and I think by post-WrestleMania, whatever steam he did have after the Survivor Series was lost, and then they just turned him and he was in the mid card. And I thought it was a bit of a lost opportunity that you pretty much, coming out of Survivor Series, it was Austin who was put in that role of avenging, you know, that he was that top babyface that was going to fight Vince, and Owen was not going to be put in that role. And I just think more could have been done with Owen while still having Austin as your top guy.
At what point was did the pile driver incident happen?
That would have been the summer before this at SummerSlam. Yeah. And there were definitely issues with that as well between Austin and Owen at the time that Austin has talked about. And Michaels discusses his match with The Undertaker that is coming up at the Royal Rumble. They're going to have a casket match. And that was the match where Michaels would mess up his back, taking that spot on the back body drop onto the casket. He says he doesn't rest in peace, but he stays up all night gyrating. And says, and then they take their robes off and they have boxers on with ribbons coming through the cracks of their asses, and they tear the boxers off and it is censored. And Jim Ross replies, "Would you look at those nuts?" And they cut to this old couple smiling and then to a woman taking a photo, not on her phone, but on an actual camera in 1997.
Yeah, this basically made it allowed them to throw in as many dick jokes as they could fit in. Call them stocking stuffers. Here are our Yuletide logs.
Sergeant Slaughter, who was at this point the on-air commissioner, comes out and he says that Shawn Michaels will defend his European title tonight or he will be stripped of the title. And Michaels says, I'll defend it against anyone. So Slaughter announces that Triple H will be his opponent. And Ross proclaims that Slaughter Claus has spoken. And Hunter's upset. He gets on the mic saying, what's it going to prove when I beat Shawn Michaels? And Shawn gets upset at this comment, calls Hunter a loser, and they tease dissension amongst the ranks in DX. And Michaels reiterates that famous line he gave Bret Hart before he left, I won't lay down for anybody. What, and that sets up our main event.
What was Vince's role at this time? He had taken himself off of TV, but did he have any other on-air presence?
No, it was he took himself off commentary at the Survivor Series and then wasn't back on after the Survivor Series. They did that interview, that famous one with the Bret Screwed Bret interview. And then we really didn't see Vince on TV again until the Mike Tyson announcement the following month. And that's when Vince transitioned into the owner position.
Right. Cool.
We go to the green screen with Ross, Cole, and Kelly setting up the show. And then the Headbangers come out wearing Santa Claus hats. Michael Cole goes up to the Godwins who come out and are feuding with the Headbangers and interviews them following a big win by the Headbangers on Shotgun Saturday night. And the Godwins issue a threat to the New Age Outlaws stating that they owe them a tag title shot. I'll be right back.
Well, okay. As John resets his...
What a gong show this is going to be.
Or an alarm show.
Yeah, exactly. At least I got this this button. Didn't discover it until like 6 months after I moved in here that I could actually turn these alarms off. I used to have to just sit through them.
That's got to be terrible. Annoying. It's got to be annoying if you're like somebody who works the late shift and then has to sleep throughout the day.
Oh, they've done this at like 5 a.m. before.
Really?
Those are not tests, but they'll just like it's a false alarm. And oh my God, there was a previous apartment I used to live at. There was one time someone pulled the alarm and they actually made us evacuate the building at like 4:30 a.m. And we have to go outside. It's like the winter. And it was just ridiculous. Like it was like this tiny little apartment. And I was just like, I'm moving out of this place. I hate it. This was also an apartment building that I didn't have a cell phone signal in my room on the fifth. Fuck. I'm getting angry now.
All right. Well, glad you guys all decided to tune in to what could be our best review of all time.
I was going to say worst. I didn't know how you're reacting to this.
No, this is a great. It's great radio. Exactly what we strive for when we decide to become broadcasters.
All right. Well, let's get back to the real reason we became broadcasters. That was to discuss Headbanger Thrasher against Henry O. Godwin, Hog for short. Thrasher hit a crossbody off the top, and this maneuver was so devastating that Phineas said, Phineas?
Phineas.
I always screw this up. Phineas.
Yeah. Pig.
Decided no more pig to run in following this top rope crossbody and disqualified his cousin Hog. At 1:12.
Don't you think the Godwins are set for a comeback? I think they'd make a great addition to the Wyatts.
I agree. You know what? I don't know how Henry Godwin is doing because it was like 2 years ago. He was in this horrific car accident and I haven't heard like anything about him. I was thinking about that watching this show that there's really been no update. Like he was in really, really bad shape from this car accident and it had to have been like 2 years ago. But I agree. I always kind of enjoy, I wasn't so much a fan of the tag team, but I always kind of liked Henry Godwin.
Did you like them better as heels or baby faces?
Heels. I thought they were great. These Southern rednecks with like, especially when they used to have like the hillbilly gym jolly theme music. Yeah. And then when they turned to this with the violin, I always liked that theme. It was like, it was perfect for these guys. These just depressing rednecks. Anyway, they were going to give the slop drop, they did, to Mosh, their finish, which was a reverse DDT. And then both are down, and they start whipping the Headbangers with belts, and the officials have to break it up. The crowd is chanting for LOD, who do not show up. So big, big feud here. The Headbangers and the Godwins. Two different lifestyles.
Bangers and... Oh, never mind.
Bangers and what?
Nothing.
No. We showed a video of Dude Love and the New Age Outlaws and their feud. They showed Dude Love beating Billy Gunn, and then after the match, Road Dogg attacking Dude Love a few weeks ago with a chair shot right to the head, and then Billy Gunn and Road Dogg putting the tag titles over the face of Mick Foley, and Billy Gunn hitting a top rope leg drop to the titles onto Foley's face. Then the following week... No, you cannot have my attention.
Onyx is doing testing on the fire panel system.
Yeah, you told us that.
Restore building operations as soon as possible.
As soon as possible. I doubt that. I think it'll be as soon as you fucking care. They always repeat it too. It's like I just heard the fucking message and then they repeat it verbatim.
Okay, well, to be fair, how many people do you think are even in your building right now? Not at work.
Probably plenty.
How many people do you think are in your building recording podcasts?
Probably 50. Easily.
Really? Oh, you just happen to live in a community of podcasters.
Big, big hub here where I live of podcasters. Okay. Yeah. Down the hallway is where Todd Martin lives. Around the corner is
Joe Rogan.
Mr. St. Laurent. Joe Rogan's actually three floors above. Yeah. And then
the guy who does this what is it? This Life? What's that so called?
This American
this
Life?
This American Life, yes.
That guy, Mark Maron, he's got his own floor. He gets very angry. Okay. Yes.
All right.
Asa is also a member.
Oh, Asa Akira from DVD ASA.
Yes. You still keep up with that show?
I fucking love that show. I listen to every show.
Is it your favorite podcast?
Yeah, no doubt.
So they show this continual beatdown of the dude, and it all culminates with... Dude Love beating Road Dogg last week on Raw, and then they beat him up on the stage and toss him off the stage through a table with this depressing music over top.
This was, anytime you get the New Age Outlaws and Mick Foley on a stage, you can guarantee that somebody's going to fall off of it, usually Mick Foley, and you can guarantee that it'll be good. I really like the New Age Outlaws at this point where, you know, before they joined DX, they're just really good bullies against Mick Foley, who's a very sympathetic guy.
Yeah, they were, these are two guys who just had these horrible gimmicks, horrible singles runs as the real Jesse James and Rockabilly. And I think that when they finally were like, well, we're going to put you two together, you can do your own promos. It was like, these two were just like, wow, this is finally, we can do something that doesn't suck.
See, but a lot of guys would maybe take that opportunity and not know what to do with it, or maybe just you know, carry on with what they were given to them. But somehow this was during a time when everybody was, you know, allowed, or I don't know, there just seemed to be something in the water at the time. But then you got really good stuff like this.
Mankind, then they cut to this week. He's in the boiler room. This is as Mankind, and he says he doesn't want to be in pain for the holidays, and mentions drinking eggnog, and he says he will be giving the beating of the New Age Outlaws lives later tonight. Then we went to maybe my favorite WWF commercial ever.
Experience the deafening thunder that is Vader. The dementia that is the deranged mankind. The haunting mystery that is the Undertaker. The unrelenting rage that is Stone Cold Steve Austin. Experience WWF The Music Volume 2. There are 15 of your favorite WWF original jams in all. To order, call 815-734-1161 or send a check or money order to the address on your screen. This album is available in stores, but why delay? Get yours now. WWF The Music Volume 2.
It was for WWF The Music Volume 2. You had to call a 1-800 number to order this thing. And some of the clips included Vader playing a drum, Mankind on the piano, The Undertaker with cymbals, and Steve Austin breaking a guitar. This was so great.
They were playing the instruments to their own theme songs. Which
I love the idea of these wrestlers composing their own songs.
Oh, I love this. I mean, I love it because it's so cheesy. Certainly, it does no favors for these characters. The only one that was semi-appropriate was Austin destroying his guitar. Because if you're Steve Austin, what am I doing this? This is stupid. I'm going to break this guitar. But then, I mean, they'll never, ever do a commercial with The Undertaker playing cymbals today. Just maybe destroys not. Him.
I hope that the making of this commercial is on that WWE
music
DVD next year. That'd be great. They show last week's edition of Raw where Steve Austin, that was the show where he tossed the IC title into the river. And then, I don't know if this was like just meant for the live crowd last week, but they keyed it as Raw After Hours. So I don't even know if they had any intention of airing this.
Oh, is that right?
Because, well, it was like, why wouldn't you have done this Santa angle this week on the show?
Right.
Unless Austin wasn't in the building.
I don't think he was. This is the only segment that he was a part of. I thought this was just a recap of the thing that they did the previous week.
Well, it very well could have. So it was called Raw After Hours, and Santa Claus is in the ring, and Santa is getting set to bring out Sable, but instead Austin comes out. This is following. This little kid gets into the ring and basically says that this is not the real Santa. Santa kicks this little child away, and then Austin comes out, asks if it's the real Santa or just a fat piece of trash, and then starts quizzing Santa on what he asked for when he was 6 years old. And Santa said it was a Barbie doll and tiddlywinks, and this prompts Santa to get up, and Austin stuns Santa and tosses him to the floor. And they just aired the entire segment that they had taped the prior week on Raw. So maybe they did tape it with the idea of showing it, but it was just a matter because, Austin was not on this show. And that's my only understanding of why they wouldn't have just done this on the show.
I think this could have been quite awful. Could have been a really just a complete disaster, like what we saw with the Damien Sandow and Mark Henry this past Monday. But I thought this was quite memorable and quite good because I thought it worked for both kids and adults. I mean, I think it was cool to see a character like Stone Cold Steve Austin interact with like a completely ridiculous scenario, like talking to a Santa Claus and then kicking the shit out of Santa Claus. It made the crowd go crazy. I just thought it was a pretty memorable Christmas type of thing that they did. It was cool.
They cut to the door of the DX locker room and you can overhear them arguing inside. And then Michael storms out as China goes after Shawn Michaels.
Yes.
How did they know the camera was there? Why would they have been arguing when this was all a ruse? They had this idea in place, but how would they have known a camera was there?
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And thus they're arguing.
Well, they had to really get into character even behind closed doors. I don't know.
The WWF Attitude promo aired. This was might have been the exact same building where they filmed the Raw thing. Maybe they just got a great day rate and they decided to film this commercial as well, where it was all the guys talking about their injuries and being real athletes.
I'd actually never seen this commercial before. I really like.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I really like this.
I know what you're thinking. I'm not a real athlete.
I'm just a wrestler.
I'm 6'10". 328 pounds.
I won boxing's Golden Gloves 3 years in a row.
I was a national champion at the University of Miami.
My jersey was retired at Florida State.
I was the ultimate fighting champion.
When you step through those ropes, bad things do happen.
Had over 200 stitches.
I've suffered a dozen concussions.
I've broken bones.
I've separated shoulders.
Damn near broke my neck.
I've blown out knees.
But I still got up.
This is who I am.
This is what I do.
I'm not really an athlete.
This isn't real. Try lacing my boots.
It seemed like it was a reaction to, you know, the fact that people, it had become public knowledge that wrestling wasn't real. This was during the time when they're all, you know, basically admitting that wrestling's fake. But it was like almost like a commercial to help win wrestling's legitimacy back. You know what I mean? Like, I guess they really felt like it was hurting their business, or it could have hurt their business, the fact that everybody knew it wasn't real. But this was really well done.
Oh, yeah. I remember the first time I saw it. I was like, it was a great spot. And it was, you know, it kind of presented these guys as this whole shift at the time. It was this whole period of shifting away from, you know, these over-the-top characters to just real people and emphasizing the personalities over the gimmicks at this point.
Yeah.
And, you know, this that kind of was the overall tone of the show. And I think that was, you know, that was consistent almost from top to bottom. Like, you still had your gimmicks, but they weren't as pronounced as maybe years prior.
You had Ken Shamrock here talking about being, you know, former UFC champion. You had Mark Mero talking about being a former Golden Gloves champion. And then all the guys discussing their injuries and how, even though they are performers, they do take real risks, bodies broken in the ring.
Damn near broke my neck.
Yeah. What wasn't a well-done commercial? WWE Shop Zone.
WWF Shop Zone at this time. Shopzone.wwf.com. I, 1 year after this show was when I got the internet for the first time, Way. And I designed my wrestling page. It was xpage.com/whatever the fuck I called it.
Does that still exist?
I don't think so. I think if you go to xpage.com, my God, did I think I was just in love with the internet. Yeah, xpage.com is, this domain is available. I almost want to buy it just so I can say I own xpage. I would say that my website was one level below what the Shop Zone site was, only because I didn't have an animated logo, and that was the only difference. This Shop Zone site, Way, was atrocious. I even feel by 1997 standards.
This looks so bad. It looked like it was made on GeoCities. There's the white, plain one page, plain white background. The only font on the whole site is Times New Roman. And the browser that they were shooting this on was Netscape Navigator, which I guess we all used at the time. But, boy, like,
I think I had, there was Netscape, maybe
it was the only
Internet
one.
Explorer was around there. Was it only Netscape?
Maybe Internet Explorer, maybe.
I can't remember.
But I mean, boy, like, was this a blast from the past? And it's hard to believe that this was only 16 years ago, because I'm contrasting everything that I'm watching on this show. And I mean, I've said it before, the wrestling product itself doesn't look too different. A lot of it's the same people. It's the same ring, you know. It's not that different. Some of the lighting, it's HD now. Yeah, okay, but it's not that different. But you look at how far the internet has come in that time, and it's just these were like the pioneer years.
The WWE is going to launch a network now, online. Yeah. As a comparison point to this. This was their prototype. This is what it has grown.
I will say that the WWE WWF has always seemed to be, like, you know, at the forefront of that. Like, I remember even back in like 96, 95, them doing those AOL promotions.
Yeah, they were doing those. I mean, WCW did a lot too, where they were doing, live shows from their pay-per-views and stuff like that.
Wait, what do you mean live shows?
Not live. They were doing like,
because there's no way anybody was streaming any type of video.
Not video, but this was like, they were doing like those audio shows. You know, remember those WCW pay-per-views?
Oh, WCW Live.
Not WCW Live, but even before that, they had a crew like Mark Madden and some of those who were just at the pay-per-views on location and at Nitro, and they'd broadcast from there.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah. So next up. In 1997, a throwaway match between The Rock and The Undertaker. This was Rock promoting himself as the undisputed Intercontinental Champion, coming off of defeating a boat in a river to reclaim the IC title after last week. He cuts this promo to chants of Rocky sucks, and this was really when he was coming into his own under the heel character after joining The Nation. And the match began. Taker hit him with a leg drop for a two count. They scaled the top rope as Paul Bearer came out. This was just after Kane had debuted in October. And it leads to Kama of The Nation stopping The Undertaker from hitting, I guess, current school at the time. And Taker crotches himself on the top rope. The Nation then attacked Taker on the floor after a commercial break. Rock has the advantage. He goes for the people's elbow, which was just the elbow at this time. Gets a two count. Rock then hits a low blow as D'Lo Brown distracts referee Earl Hebner, and then Taker hits these shots to the body. The crowd's into his comeback, hits a leg drop as Rock is bent over. Then D'Lo gets on the apron. Taker goes after him, turns and choke slams the Rock, hits the tombstone, but then the lights go out. Kane's music hits and Kane comes out, gets into the ring with all the red lighting, and Paul Bearer cuts a promo calling Taker nothing but a shell of what he once was. He's ashamed he had anything to do with The Undertaker. And then Kane goes to attack him. Taker stops him briefly, but hesitates and won't hit his brother. And this leads to Kane getting the better of The Undertaker as Paul Bearer is mocking him. And Paul says that 1998 will be the year of Kane as Kane sets off his pyro. So no finish to this match.
None. How did you like the Kane angle at this time when it first debuted?
It didn't blow me away. I thought it was just a little bit too goofy for me.
I remember there being a lot of hype, like leading up to it. How, you know, oh, they're gonna make this mask. It's gonna look so realistic. It's gonna look like a burnt face, and then didn't.
Yeah, I mean, they brought him in, and I mean, it's a testament to the fact that they introduced him in October and they held off on the match until WrestleMania. Like, can you even imagine that today, of keeping two guys apart for that amount of time? But they did it, and I don't know, they got into, I always remember this segment where it was like Taker was at one at the ramp, Kane was in the ring, and they started just like blowing shit up with fire, and they set some cameraman on fire. And I was like, this is stupid. Like, this is just fucking stupid. And it was like, I can only take so many hocus pocus angles with The Undertaker. And that's what, when I was a kid, I was like, I liked The Undertaker, but he was never my favorite character because it was just a little bit too much for me, like with all the witchcraft stuff, which apparently is a big problem in the world.
Yes, that's right. It's amazing that on the one hand they're going more realistic, ultra realistic with some of these other angles and gimmicks of this time, but then on the other hand they are going more fake, more. It's darker, darker than what we're used to, but still more surreal.
Yeah, to kind of counter my own point though, when Taker did turn heel in 99 and started the ministry, like I was like, I thought that group was like, I don't know, it was like, it was less kind of on the goofy side, and it was still goofy, like if you go back in hindsight, but it was like this satanic cult, and I just thought The Undertaker was just so menacing as like this kind of satanic leader at the time. It was a weird weird time. And The Undertaker, it's interesting to look at how that character has navigated time, much like the WWF website has. From there, the second hour, at this point, and they still continue this, like it's basically presented as almost, it's the same show, but it's two separate shows.
They don't flash the copyright anymore in between hours.
Yeah, they do.
Really?
They still do that. If you catch it at the top of each hour, or right before the top of the hour, they will have a little thing, like the lower left hand. They still will put
haven't noticed it in a long time.
Well, they're subtle. Right.
Well, but yeah, what is the reason for this? I mean, at this point in 97, they actually played the whole opening again, did basically a whole nother, you know, recap.
I don't know how they were able to get away with it, but it was like this just blatant trick so that when the ratings came out, they were able to have two shows amongst whatever your top 10 highest rated cable shows. You had Raw, and then you had the War Zone, and they were credited as two shows the WWE produces that have these high numbers.
And why stop there? Why not do separate them by every half hour?
I don't know. I don't know how like they weren't able to just be grouped as one 2 hour show, but they were able to do this. And Nitro never did this, but Raw did, and I don't know how they were able to get away with it. To me, it was if they could get away with it, like if people aren't the wiser to it, then more power to them, I guess.
Sure.
That was essentially it, and they've continued it to this day. Like even when you see the ratings, they'll break it up into hour by hour for Raw. So our new commentary team for hour two, Jim Ross and Jim Cornette, maybe one of the most forgotten announced teams that they had for a time period in 1997, 1998.
I like Cornette a lot.
Me too. Yeah, I find it even more enjoyable to go back and hear him talk about, you know his real feelings about Sable and his issues with Michaels at the time and how he calls this. Like, when there's bullshit in the ring, he pretty much just calls it out as bullshit that you can decode.
I would love to, like, try know what Jim Cornette eats, because I don't know how anybody is able to maintain that level of energy in any facet of life, like throughout anything I've ever heard him on, it'd be a podcast or a commentary or anything. He's like the most energetic person I've ever seen. So, I mean, I don't know what he's eating. Is it like carb heavy?
Well, at this time, it was probably a lot of Wendy's.
Yeah, I guess.
It was. I mean, that was his burger of choice, yeah. Was at Wendy's. So and he was miserable at this time because he had to live in Stamford, Connecticut.
And they didn't have Wendy's?
They did have Wendy's. He just hated. He wanted to live in Louisville, Kentucky, and he was so happy when he finally, and he was also involved in the creative team as well at this time. So you ask Jim Cornette about 1997, it's a lot of headaches for the man, but he was able to get off and launch OVW and then move home, and he was happy as can be, barring all the future issues that came with that WWE-OVW relationship. But kind of an underappreciated, but you don't necessarily picture Jim Ross and Jim Cornette having any kind of a lengthy broadcast relationship together, but it did exist during this time period.
I thought both were very good. I mean, obviously Jim Ross is Jim Ross, but Jim Cornette always obviously has, you know, a tremendous mind for the business, was able to always focus on the storyline at hand and do his best to you know, get whoever over.
You know what I really liked watching on this show in particular, whether it was, you know, Jim Ross or whoever, was that when a heel was cutting a promo and maybe running down the babyface, it seemed that, you know, whether this was a coincidence, which I doubt it was like Ross had an ability to know when the heel was going too far that he would step in and defend the babyface, who was not out there to do it for themselves. And it always kept the babyface strong, even when a heel was cutting a big promo on the babyface. Mm. And that happened a few times I found on this show.
Right.
The DX music hits and China comes out first, followed by Michaels and Hunter. And before Hunter can get to the ring, Owen Hart attacks him from behind and then is sent to the back. DX is all upset at Sergeant Slaughter for being in on this attack, and he's smiling about this. And this was pretty much the tease that Michaels and Hunter were going to face off at the top of this hour, and they would prolong it to keep you on the edge of your seat for the whole show. And hopefully not tune over to Nitro.
And also a way to, you know, get people thinking about Owen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they still wanted to keep him fresh in everyone's mind. And then we go to one of the... I don't remember this contest at all, Way. But you had a chance to win a Steve Austin pickup truck.
You can win a truck that says 100% pure whoopass on the tail.
Oh, this was awesome. I did they ever give this away?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
I would assume so if they advertised this. Wouldn't you have wanted awesome. A truck with the flaming skull on the front to drive that to work every day? pick your wife up in the 100% whoop-ass truck?
Well, Quentin Rampage Jackson would have. I mean, he had a giant truck that said Rampage on it.
And then he went on a rampage.
He did go on a rampage with that truck. Well,
the best
if anyone's
the show definitely were the commercials.
The commercials are so great. Whoever uploaded this, thank you very much for keeping this part of WWF history alive, because it was certainly a highlight on this show for me in particular, as well as Way. And if anyone knows if they ever gave away this pickup truck, I would love to know. Ross and Cornette, they're on camera with the green screen, and they state that Michaels and Hunter will have a match tonight. They show the Mankind promo from earlier in the night, and then we cut to the New Age Outlaws for a series of vignettes where they're in the back with these mining helmets on with lights, looking into the boiler, the bowels of the arena, which provided Jim Ross and Cornette to make as many bowel jokes as they could possibly fit into these segments. And they attack a random person in the dark who, surprise, surprise, was not Mankind. And their search continued.
So this was the LOD thing, I suppose, was just on the side of this. This was their main.
Yeah, well, they kind of wrote off LOD temporarily.
Right, okay.
And then they would come back. I think it was at the Royal Rumble. They would have a match with LOD.
I see.
And after the segment, we go back to
Mark Mero.
Mark Mero comes out, but Jim Cornette, this was hilarious. He just wanted to see Sable.
Yeah,
he was like, Jim, you said she had this little outfit to wear. Where is it? Where's Sable? And Mero gets onto the mic. He says that he doesn't like to show off his property, but he's in the holiday mood. And he brings out Sable, who is completely covered in a Rudolph outfit, complete with a giant reindeer head that she is wearing out. You would have no clue this was even Sable. As she came out, came into the ring, Mero asked if her antlers are real, and then kicked her out of the ring to boos.
Mm-hmm. Mero's opponent for this match, Scott Taylor.
Yeah, I want to say a young Scott Taylor, but it looked like an old Scott Taylor before his run as Scotty Too Hot.
He definitely looked older, and I think part of that was because he had a terrible mullet, like really disgusting mullet. 97. Yes.
And a mustache to boot that made this man look like the most generic jobber ever.
Yeah, who would have thought that spiking your hair up into a ridiculous whatever he had would have like been tremendous for his career.
Yeah, but it would be. Taylor tripped up Mero, hit a clothesline off the top, and then Sable takes the reindeer head off to reveal it is Sable. Mero hits a press slam to Scotty and then starts arguing with Sable and then rolls up Taylor for a two count and then hits a TKO to pin Taylor at 225. Jim Cornette literally fell out of his seat here for the finish as you hear this tumbling on the announcing table. Like, we're at whatever studio they were in. Clearly, they didn't feel like a retake here because Cornette literally, you just hear like, it was a sound like if an announcer got swatted at ringside. Like, he fell out of his chair, which Ross literally said is what Cornette did. It was the best part of this match for me.
Well, like I said, he has a lot of energy.
Mero then hit a low blow to Taylor after the match. He's beating him down when Tom Brandy, a footnote in WWF history, the former Salvatore Sincere, comes into the ring making the save and hits a baseball slide, sending Mero's knee into the barricade. And then Sable takes her reindeer outfit off, and she's got a Santa outfit on, which gets a big pop from the crowd. And she wishes them all a Merry Christmas.
You don't remember the Brandy Mero feud of 1997?
It was a classic.
Yeah. The Sable thing. She takes off the reindeer outfit, and then she wears a Santa outfit. But
which you would think this crowd is like never seen a woman's legs.
Well, what
before.
I mean is like, yeah, exactly that. The Santa
compared
outfit,
to what she would not wear in 1998. I mean, this was
she's almost just as covered as the reindeer outfit. I was expecting like a bikini top, something like that. This was like, I don't know, pretty tame.
Well, let's remember a lot of the audience. I mean, they had dial up and they had, you know, stuff online like the WWF website. I mean, naked women were still in short supply on a daily basis.
Or it took you like 5 minutes to load up like a nude picture.
Yeah, you'd see maybe like a pixelated tit. So yeah. Seeing your Sable in a Santa outfit. I mean, this Lowell crowd.
It's like we're all Amish.
They really were here. Yeah. So anyway, a Merry Christmas from Sable. Then we got a Headbangers action figure commercial. This one was okay, but not of the level of some prior commercials we saw. And then Triple H and China are in the back, and they get interviewed by Ross and Cornette, playing up the problems with Michaels. China kept whispering into Hunter's ear, and he started mocking Michaels, blah, blah, blah. Then we got a classic here, Way. We talk about, you know, the faction warfare at the time. Two members of the most prestigious groups were going to go at it here on the Christmas edition of Raw in 1997. 8-Ball and Kurgan, formerly the Interrogator. He'd gone through a rebranding.
He's now Kurgan.
The Jackal by his side.
He's now Kurgan the Interrogator, so you don't get confused.
Yeah, apparently there were too many people that weren't able to decipher who the giant guy was next to Sniper and Recon.
This man's a movie star now.
He is. Big he is one star. Of the most successful people to come out of the WWF. Yeah. Who was the fourth member of the Truth Commission? Do you remember?
There were Buchanan, Kurgan, Who else?
The Truth Commission was a pro wrestling heel stable in the WWF and the USWA. Their gimmick was that they were a white supremacist paramilitary group from South Africa to take on Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
Okay, and who are all the members?
Recon and Kurgan. Oh, they had, okay, members. The Commandant. I don't think he made it to the WWF. Kurgan, Recon, Sniper, Tank, and the Jackal.
Sniper is a guy who used to be also, he's a Canadian professional wrestler who also went by the name Rambo.
The Jackal, of course, Don Callis, who would have a lot of success in ECW. Sniper. Luke Poirier, yes, formerly Rambo.
Of course, you had Recon, who's Bull Buchanan.
Yep, he would actually. I totally forgot this guy was Recon. To be honest,
you had Tank, who
I don't know if Tank was Tank. Did he ever make? Yeah, I guess he was in WWF.
Apparently, but Tank, who was the former Mantar.
In 1997, Tank was Goldust's unnamed bodyguard, which I don't remember at all.
Well, this is more than I ever cared to know about this Truth Commission on this podcast.
They never really pushed the white supremacist part of the Truth Commission on television in WWF.
Right. All right. Oz was a very popular show at this time, was it not?
I think
and
so.
And then you sort of had that replicated in the WWF with the Nation. You had the Bikers, the Aryans, and then I guess this.
It kind of was like Sons of Anarchy at the time.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Where they have all these different factions. They have like the Asian gang, you have the Mayans.
Oh, there's an Asian gang in Sons?
Yep.
Well, what did they ride? Like Kawasaki's?
No, come on. They're not that stereotypical. They usually arrive in cars. They don't ride bikes. Yeah.
Okay.
They're poised. It's a big turf war in season 7 coming up. The Jackal pretty much is on the microphone for the whole match. He comes out. He puts like, I'm not going to say a diamond on this woman's forehead. I don't know what this was, but he was playing like this kind of like Dave Koresh kind of guy that would
Who's
just...
That?
He's like this kind of a cult leader that was around for the time. I don't think he's even alive anymore.
Okay.
That's about it. Dave Koresh.
Mm-hmm. His gimmick was that he had a live mic at all times. And was
Dave Koresh is he died in April of 1993.
Okay.
All right. Way too much looking up of characters that I really too much investment in.
Get rid of we should not have the internet at all. We should just shut down the internet during a recording.
They were already playing up Kurgan as a favorite if he enters the Royal Rumble. I will say on this show, the Rumble wasn't for a number of weeks after this show, and they pretty much had all the matches laid out and pushing the Rumble here on December 22nd. Transition to today, Wei, where we don't know a thing about the Royal Rumble this year.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
They grab 8-Ball on the apron. Kurgan comes from behind, hits a sidewalk slam. 2 minutes and 40 seconds. And then after the match, 8-Ball goes after Jackal when Sniper and Recon run in, and then Skull, the twin brother of 8-Ball, a.k.a. the Harris brothers, comes in with a 2x4. So 1998 setting up to be a big, big war between DOA and the Truth Commission.
Mm-hmm. I don't think any of these matches are really worth commenting on because there was
nothing happened. These were like the most short, like short attention span matches. Like there were nothing.
There was clearly a lesser priority put on match quality and work rate at this time.
Oh, yeah. There was, I wouldn't even classify any match on this show as good, even average.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just pretty much not even showcases. These were like 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Afterwards, we go back to the Outlaws. They're still searching for Mankind in the dark. And the announcers are suggesting maybe this is being a trap set up by Mankind. D'Lo Brown against Ken Shamrock. How about this for surreal?
What an ovation for the world's most dangerous man, Ken Shamrock. And our congratulations go out to Ken's younger brother, Frank, who became the first ever UFC middleweight champion over the weekend with a 22-second submission victory.
Ken Shamrock comes out, and Jim Ross takes time to congratulate Ken's brother, Frank Shamrock, on becoming the first UFC middleweight champion over the past weekend. This was when the light heavyweight title was billed as the middleweight title, and Frank beating Kevin Jackson at Ultimate Japan in 16 seconds and getting a shout out here on Raw.
It kind of is surreal.
It's very surreal.
You think Jim Ross was actually watching at this time?
Yes, I do believe he was. Oh. I think that's the only reason this was mentioned. It was not like this was a concerted effort by anyone in the back. I think Jim Ross was very much following UFC at this point in time. And it was not easy to follow in 97. Mm-hmm. It was funny, though. He mentioned how, you know, Ken was training Frank for this fight, which was funny because this was after Frank had left the lion's den. And this was like his second fight since leaving the camp. So actually, Ken and Frank, I don't think we're even on speaking terms at this point.
Well, it works for storyline purposes.
Sure, sure. Ken's training the middleweight champion of the world. They already announced that Ken Shamrock is in the Royal Rumble. He hits a belly-to-belly to D'Lo Brown and the ankle lock and taps out immediately, 225. And then The Rock comes out on the mic. He says he's going to discuss the golf crisis, but says, it's not that important. And he says, so you were a champion in the UFC, but everyone knows the UFC is full of has-beens and never was. And challenges Ken Shamrock to a match at the Royal Rumble for his undisputed Intercontinental title.
Save that clip.
And sure, yeah, you're the king of the UFC. Well, everybody knows the UFC ain't nothing but has-beens and never was, just like yourself.
Yeah.
Next time
The Rock.
Next time The Rock.
Degrading the UFC.
Yeah, next time he shows up at a UFC. It was cool to see Ken wrestle because he employs a really cool shoot style that was, even at this time, quite different from anything else that was in the WWE.
And they go to Michaels and China in the locker room, and it's pretty much the exact same, but insert Michaels instead of Hunter, where China's whispering into Michaels' ear. Both men during these interview segments were wearing China t-shirts, and they joked that they're wearing their lucky shirt in both segments. This was kind of just a goofy Shawn Michaels promo. Another ad for the WWF Shop Zone site. The Outlaws continue, and this was when Ross and Cornette just made bowel jokes.
And, well, our camera is still following Road Dogg and Billy in the bowels of the building, James.
Well, we appear now to be in the innermost bowels of the building. There is some movement there.
Hey, dog.
There is movement in the bowels. They are deep in the bowels of the arena. And it ends with Mankind attacking them while singing Christmas carols. And it ends with the Outlaws getting the better of Mankind, locking him in a freezer where Jim Ross and Jim Cornette respond A, with grave concern and contact security, or B, say, it's a Mankind-sicle. And then we just moved on. This man might be dead. We don't know.
Yeah.
He's locked in a freezer. I'm sure someone will take care of him. Goldust and Luna come out. I'm sorry. The artist formerly known as Goldust, where Goldust is dressed as a Christmas tree. And it was a different time period, clearly, in 1997 way, where Jim Ross could get away with lines such as, now we don our gay apparel. And also made reference to the fact that he sounds like Nathan Lane as Goldust read "Twas the Night Before Christmas" with a lisp, and Cornette just completely shit on this. This was a terrible segment. Cornette said, "I knew I shouldn't have ate those brownies the fans brought me today." This is just a terrible segment.
It definitely felt pretty surreal, pretty strange.
Cornette added, "How did I get into this business?" When Santa finally showed up, nailed Goldust right in the back of the head with the sack of toys or whatever was in his bag, and it's revealed as Vader claws as Goldust and Luna retreat, and they announce that Vader and Goldust have a match at the Royal Rumble. Pretty horrendous segment, and as much as we sing the praises of Goldust in 2013, this version of Goldust, I hated. I mean, it was, there was a feeling that his Goldust character had come to an end, but this was not the direction that proved to have any kind of stability.
What was the idea here? He was kind of shifting between, you know, Dustin Reynolds and this at the time. Like, what was going on?
I took it as like the dude's on acid or shit. Like, it was just completely bizarre shit where he came out and was like, I don't know if the template was like Marilyn Manson and just dressing up like a maniac. I don't know what it was, but it sucked to me at the time, and it sucked today in hindsight. So that was that. Shawn Michaels and Triple H was our main event for the European title. Both come out to the DX theme and in their China t-shirts. The bell rings. We have less than 5 minutes left in the show, and Cornette brings up the fact that this doesn't make sense, that this match could end so quickly. And he says, maybe we should call the USA Network to get more time. And then he informs us, the director is currently making that call. They did nothing for the first minute. Both got advice from China. And then they go for a collar and elbow tie-up, to which Michaels takes a flat back bump, lays down as Hunter does an exaggerated running the rope spot, ending with a big splash, I assume mocking the Ultimate Warrior.
That's what it felt like.
And pins Michaels at a minute 38. Cornette just completely blows this off as a joke and was probably legit livid at the time. And it almost feels silly to criticize this today way, where this is a title that was not your world title, but really people were legitimately upset at this. Not to the extent of the finger poke of doom, but in 1997, titles were valued much more than today. And what did you think of this?
Well, I never valued the European Championship as anything. So I wasn't offended by this. It kind of sucks for, you know, if this was your main event, if you're going there to see a show live. But it was just a little bit of TV. And I think a lot of people remember this. And some people probably liked it a lot.
Slaughter then comes out at the entrance, and Michaels gets on the mic and he's pretending to cry, which Cornette notes he can do on cue. And he says of all his matches he's been in, this was the most emotionally and mentally draining. He hugs Hunter. Ross says, oh, look, he's lost his smile. Hunter then says, other than his kid being born, which doesn't exist that he knows of, this is the greatest moment of his life. And then they're laughing at Slaughter, and Slaughter's just nodding his head and says under his breath, next week you're defending against Owen Hart. And the announcers sell this big that the babyface commissioner has one-upped DX, and they have no clue that Hunter's got to face Owen Hart next week. And that's how the show went off the air. Merry Christmas. Yeah.
I will say I thought Cornette did a great job of calling it like it was going to be a real match, despite knowing the finish, of course. Like, Cornette was like, oh, he's just they're taking it very slow right now because they don't want to, run out of energy. And now they're just warming up. Like, I thought Cornette did a fun job of that.
So there you go. That was Raw from 97.
Yeah, not much of a show.
Yeah, I mean, when you look back, I mean, 97 is kind of touted as, you know, creatively a great, great year for the WWF, but this was certainly not indicative of that. Even the Christmas, I mean, I'm very easygoing when it comes to a Christmas-themed show, but even this was I give this show like a 2.5 out of 10.
I give it a 2. This really felt like it was we're about to go on vacation. Let's just throw something together quickly, throw in a lot of recaps. Not much to this show.
Well, let's see what everybody else had to say on the message board. We'll start off with Martin from London. Even though Raw redesigned its look in 97, this smaller building in Lowell added some character and had a good look to it. Earlier in 97, it was also home to Shawn Michaels' Lost My Smile promo, which I did not realize, which Jim Cornette referred to here, and HBK added another moment to the building, even if it was burying the European title by passing it to Triple H uncontested. Why on earth would Owen Hart have wanted to go after it after seeing the disregard DX showed for it? The only standout match on this show was the first one-on-one meeting between The Undertaker and The Rock. Of all the major stars from this time period, Taker and Rock were probably two that didn't have the major match or rivalry with each other. A WrestleMania match between them would have been great, but each had their own things going on over the years. Given Taker had a casket match for the WWF title coming up, it was wise to have him about to beat The Rock, yet protect Rock with the Kane run-in. Some other small observations other than Brock Lesnar and maybe some spots Punk and Bryan might do, you wouldn't have the UFC so heavily referenced today as it was here in the Ken Shamrock match, aired a day after Frank Shamrock tapped Kevin Jackson in 16 seconds. Another fun thing was seeing the Shop Zone look at the time, almost as if it was assembled using Angel Fire or GeoCities. And did anyone ever win that Stone Cold pickup truck? All in all, a fun Christmas show without the WWF ever really kicking into top gear. It'd be worse if they tried a similar show today over 3 hours. I'd give it 6 Gold Dust as a Christmas trees out of 10. And who would have thought he'd look as good as he does today after seeing him on this show?
We go to Chris in Ottawa, who says, hey gang, Austin beating the crap out of Santa Claus serves as a reminder of just how uncool the WWE product became 15 years later. In 97, Stone Cold was kicking Kris Kringle's ass, and everyone loved it. In 2012, Alberto Del Rio accidentally kills Santa Claus with his sweet car, and everyone's sad and angry with him. Poor old Vince must be so out of touch, it must explain how prevalent Twitter is on WWE television. Would you care to do this? He's got a Vince impression.
Do what?
Do this. He wrote like a Vince impression.
No, I'll let you do it.
I'm not doing it.
Well, I can't just do impressions on cue. I need to be in the moment.
Okay, forget it.
Next up. This takes me back. I remember watching this Raw and going to bed anxious to talk to my friends at school the next day about everything that happened. Would you have school the next day? Wouldn't you be on break by now?
Was this actually Christmas Day?
No. This was December 22nd it aired.
I'd be off. Maybe he had summer school.
Perhaps.
What am I saying? Winter school.
Well, maybe he lives in somewhere where it's summer in December. Maybe he's in L.A. I don't know. What the fuck? Nowadays, if I even watch Raw, I do it behind closed doors while silently judging myself. Well, that's just depressing. Most weeks, I just listen to review of Raw on the way to work Tuesday and call it a day. The wrestling was not great at all on this show, but there was just an attitude of excitement and a feeling of what the hell is going to happen next that today is missing. PG isn't the problem. It's a complete lack of awareness of what people want to see. Daniel Bryan stealing the show on Monday and then losing a handicap match on the pay-per-view 6 days later says it all.
Gaurav Kumar from India, this was such a shitty episode of Raw. We all criticize today's product, but the product back then sucked so much more. The wrestlers today are much more athletic and much more entertaining. I give this pathetic show 0.02 out of 10.
Oh, so he admits he had some enjoyment.
He had 0.02.
Brett in Fort Mac, for whatever, I've always remembered this show, and by that I mean I remember two things. I remember how small the arena was, which I kind of liked, felt a bit like the Manhattan Center ECW arena to an extent. The other thing I've never forgotten was Hunter running back and forth jumping over Sean. I'm not really sure why. Contrary to what Gaurav thought, I enjoyed this show, even though it wasn't great. It felt like a bit of a clip show, yet despite having lots of replays, it still felt less repetitive than a three-hour Raw. Incredible to see The Rock and Taker on Raw, which would now sell out a Mania. Austin, with just another entertaining segment, he comes out, few words, stunner. No need for anything more. He was also hurt at this point from that. He's still... Now, I guess he was back at this point, right? He came back at the Survivor Series, but he was still somewhat... They weren't putting him in the ring, so to speak, on a weekly basis at this point. You can really tell it was the Attitude Era, even though Sean tells a fan to sit his fat ass down when Goldust does the gay voice, and of course, the mooning segment. Looking back, though, there's lots of crap, but it's still more entertaining than anything being put on today. A 5 out of 10, but if I'm grading on other Christmas shows, 6.5 out of 10.
Okay. Tanner from Parts Unknown. I remember the show very well and compared to last year's Christmas show and the looks of next week's Christmas show, this was awesome. I enjoyed the stuff with Hunter and Sean. Austin was great, and seeing Rock versus Taker on Raw really shows you how lackluster the product has become 16 years later. I give this 7 elves out of 10.
From David Duffenberg. When this show first aired, I was at the age where I was starting to enjoy performers regardless of if they were a heel or a babyface. DX was a heel group, but they were entertaining, so I cheered for them when torturing Slaughter. When he announced a European title match, I just knew how it would all end. It was the kind of predictability that worked. Hunter bouncing off the ropes like a fool had me cracking up, far better than any attempt at humor he's tried the last 10 years. It's the only Christmas Raw that I can recall something good happening in recent memory. All other holiday shows, I just groan remembering things like Del Rio killing Santa. The rest of the show wasn't anything worth remembering, but the DX hijinks made it worth watching. A solid 7 out of 10. Merry Christmas to you all.
We go to Derek from Denton, Texas. I just want to say I thought the intro videos for both parts of Raw is War were awesome for some reason, even though this is the only the second or third time I've seen the intros. I remember seeing the European title match on YouTube and thought it was pretty damn funny at the time. And I've also become a really big fan of Owen Hart as well, so I was happy to see him attack Triple H before his match. It's always awesome seeing Stone Cold show up and insult somebody and kick their ass even if it is Santa Claus. This particular arena gave me an ECW vibe, which I really didn't mind too much overall. I give this show a 6 out of 10. Have a safe and happy holiday.
And finally, from Tommy C. in Detroit. I still remember this episode. I had just started watching WWF a few weeks before this, so I didn't know that Raw was taped half the time and there were spoilers out there. One of my favorite moments is right when the Triple H-HBK match was starting. It was like 11.01 p.m. and JR says something like, "We have taken our last commercial break and we just got off the phone with the USA Network. We are going to stick with this as long as it takes, folks." I was genuinely excited then. They swerved us all, and I got legitimately upset. Great trip down memory lane. 8 pairs of mistletoe underwear out of 10. Well, that's a lovely visual. All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for your feedback watching this, I guess, polarizing edition of Raw from 1997. And that's going to bring this show to a close.
I mean, I definitely think there's a lot of nostalgia involved when watching a show like this. And you can certainly enjoy even the shittiest segments, you know, looking back, just simply because this was the time that I think a lot of people look back fondly on. But I feel like if you took the same characters, like let's say, you know, we had the same characters today and put them in this show, in this role, I don't know. I don't think I would have really enjoyed it.
Yeah, very, very true. And we'll see how next week's Raw Christmas stacks up, maybe with the 1997 version.
I'm definitely feeling the effects of this Red Devil. It's like it's weird because of the Red Bull in it. It's like I feel like I'm bouncing, but at the same time, like I'm not very coordinated when I'm bouncing. So it's a weird like combination of the two.
Well, Wei is half drunk, half caffeinated. As we end off review away, we have a very, very busy week. I'm kind of overwhelmed with all the stuff that is going on.
You mean this last week? Like this?
No, like moving forward. We've got all our regular shows are up right now, everybody. We've got the big Christmas show next week. That'll be up Wednesday morning, Christmas morning. And you can get all the details at lawradio.proboards.com. Do submit something. We hope to have as many of you part of our Christmas celebration as possible. It should be fun next week, Wei.
Yeah.
I don't know what to expect.
So it has to be a song, right?
Like we want a song, yeah. But you can also, you know, we're asking for some predictions, some creative contributions from our listenership.
I look forward to that a lot.
As well, Wednesday night, we'll have a new edition of Bauer and Pollock up on the site, including Court chatting about, did you hear he got a new job,
Wei? I did.
Yeah,
that's the rumor at Ring of Honor. Court of Honor.
Yes. Court. Oh, my goodness. Why didn't I think of that? Court of Honor is coming up on Wednesday night. And then we are going to be back with Review and Impact later this week, chatting about Final Resolution. Do you have a Final Resolution this year, Wei?
I don't even know if I have a first resolution. Final one.
we're going to find out on Thursday night.
Oh, shit. There's a pay-per-view tomorrow. Oh, my God.
No, it's a free preview. Yeah. And then Sunday night, big edition of Live Audio Wrestling, where we are going to be joined by Jim Ross and The Miz, Mike Mizanin.
I know.
What an interesting show we've got, along with Dave Meltzer. Could there be anything more you could ask for on one edition of Live Audio Wrestling outside of Lloyd?
It's the Chris Miz edition of Raw.
Oh, man.
Don't you dare revisit it.
Might have to use that reference when I speak to the man. All right, so that's coming up Sunday night, midnight Eastern, TSN 1050 Toronto, the Team 1040 Vancouver, Sirius XM 167. And as we also mentioned, our annual Best of and Worst of shows are coming up, Best of December 29th and Worst of January the 5th. And I think we can officially announce, Wei, that it is going to be a panel of Dan Lavransky, Jason Agnew, myself, and coming into studio for those two shows, Wei Ting.
Yeah, that's me. Yep.
I'm so excited, Wei, that you're going to be... Anytime Wei comes into the studio, it's like The Rock showing up on Raw. It's just a big deal in and of itself.
And then quickly, we get sick of it.
Yeah, and then they ask why you said you'd never leave, Wei.
Yeah.
But that's why. You come in, you pop business. You're coming in for the biggest shows of the year.
Well, what I'm really looking forward to is the gift exchange.
There's always the annual Law gift exchange where Wei always has some very clever gifts. I'm praying mine arrive in the mail before the exchange, and we'll definitely chat about it on the show.
For sure.
I got something good for you.
Is it a case of Red Devil?
Nope. It is not Red Devil. Okay. I'm hoping it meets Wei's approval. I think I've struck out the last couple of years.
No, you haven't. No, you've done great.
Have you worn your gifts once?
I've worn my Review Wei shirt. I wore it yesterday. I wore it like
Oh, that's true. That's true. You do wear that shirt. All right. Well, we are going to get on out of here. We need a song to end. I think it's only appropriate we pick some Christmas song, Way. Is there one particular song that just drives you insane when you hear it overplayed during the holiday months?
Well, I think you're the radio. You're the expert on this. I'd feel terrible to choose something that doesn't meet your standards.
Oh, boy. Well, let's go out with... personally, I feel one of the most... You know, whenever you think of Christmas songs, you go to kind of the stock classics. But to me, the most underappreciated Christmas song is from Darlene Love. This is from Darlene Love. Exactly. Way just emphasized my point. The most underappreciated contributor to Christmas songs. This was immortalized in Home Alone 2. It's something that Way is not going to be this year because he's not going to be in Tokyo. He will be with all of you because he is not going to be all alone on Christmas. Goodbye.
Lovely.